The NBA Finals are heating up. Looking for hot takes on all the postseason action? The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, is the podcast to listen to for the ultimate finals coverage. Host and former NBA sharpshooter J.J. Redick not only has a plugged-in perspective on the action from his time in the league, but he's also announcing the games in real time for ESPN. J.J. has the ultimate insider point of view, and he's taking you along for the ride as he breaks down the best defensive schemes, dunks, and drives from each game. And speaking of incredible drives, there's no better place to tune into your new favorite podcast, The Old Man and the Three, than in a standard-setting BMW. Luxury meets power to create a wholly new driving experience. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard, BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
And we're back. Welcome back to the
Radio.
And we're back. Welcome back to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm Sammy Jacobs. Along with me is TJ Inman. TJ, do we finally have you back?
Yes, I am here if you can hear me.
Sweet. Awesome. So we're back. We had some technical difficulties. Had to restart a new show. So let's kick it off again. Before we get started here, TJ, I do want to put that statement on Terry Hutchins and what he's meant to me in the night. And it's very sad that Terry passed away late last week from complications from a car accident, and can't imagine that the pain and suffering that his family had to go through this holiday season, and my thoughts are with him. But Terry was one of the great guys on the IU beat, and he was one of the first guys to take me under his wing, off to drive me up to the Bowling Green game, and just, you know, riding in the car with him, listening to his stories about, you know, covering the Colts and covering IU and reading all his books and things like that. You know, it was like being a kid in a candy shop as a sports fan, just listening to these stories and just letting them talk and about all this stuff. And, you know, he had me on several podcasts and things like that, and thought enough of me to bring me on, you know, as a substitute for doing stats when he was covering basketball and football over there's an away game he couldn't make and things like that. So, you know, many thanks to Hutch, and he will be missed. But let's get down back to some IU football news this morning. TJ, Kane Womack, the Indiana linebackers coach, received a promotion up to defensive coordinator. Womack came to IU last year when the NCAA expanded coaching staffs to include 10 coaches. He was brought on from South Alabama, where he was the defensive coordinator. He's also the defensive coordinator at Eastern Illinois. Spent time as a graduate assistant with Tom Allen at Ole Miss. So he's familiar with this 4-2-5 base defense that Allen runs. He ran at South Alabama. South Alabama improved, was one of the top five improved defenses in the nation in 2016. He held that job for 16 and 17. He did a pretty decent job this year with the high linebackers coming in. And I think this is just the logical move for Tom Allen. It's something that he has hinted at after the Purdue game. He was thinking about doing. Mm-hmm. He hinted at it at signing day, and it's something that we've discussed, I think, ever since the Minnesota game, where maybe we thought Tom Allen was in over his head a little bit and needed to, diverge some of that, some of the coaching responsibilities on defense out to somebody else. And Womack is just a logical choice there. And, you know, we'll see what this does. It's definitely it's a great opportunity for Coach Womack. And we'll see how it affects the team. Indiana struggled on offense. They struggled special teams. And maybe that's because the head coach was too focused on the defense and needed to take a whole team, a whole team angle and be the head coach and have a hand in everything instead of, you know, delegating the offense to somebody, delegating the special teams to somebody, and instead, you know, be a part of the whole team instead of just the face of the defense and the head coach. So now you could be focused. Tom Allen could focus on being the head coach of the Indiana University football team. He has a guy he trusts his defensive coordinator and some really good coaches on the defensive side of the ball that he could trust and hopefully make this defense better. They did take a step back last year, fell to 11th in the conference in points per game, giving up 29.9. But the defense was young, and it'll be interesting to see what Coach Womack does in the spring and ultimately in the fall. What are your thoughts on this promotion, TJ?
But you're right. It's something that we kind of saw coming. Tom Allen certainly strongly suggested it was going to occur, and now it's been made official. You know, I think it's part of the maturing process of a head coach that, you know, you initially, I think, Tom Allen, it made sense for him to stay in charge of the defense. That's where his comfort zone was and still is, really. It made sense for, you know, a guy that had such an impact on the defensive side of the ball to stay in charge of that. Now, as you've progressed a little bit, you've kind of realized, or Tom Allen has realized, okay, it's taking up too much of my time to, you know, if I'm going to do this right on the defensive side of the ball, it takes a certain number of hours and energy to do it correctly. And, you know, after this season, I think he clearly has realized that, look, other areas of the team are not getting enough of my attention. I don't have enough of that. So you're just going to reallocate some of that energy and focus, put some trust into those defensive assistants. You know, I imagine that Mark Hagan is going to have some additional responsibility. And I think that certainly Kane Womack obviously has additional responsibility as well. He is going to remain coaching the linebackers. According to Indiana's release, that's the current plan. I'll be interested to see what happens with special teams now and with offense now, because Tom Allen, you know, he has more time now to look at some of those things and figure out, you know, what to do with the offense, with the special teams. And, you know, I think that'll be kind of the next move Tom Allen is, what do you do on those facets of the game? So I don't think Indiana's coaching staff is done shuffling responsibilities. You know, whether or not the coaching staff personnel remains the same is still to be seen as well. So that's kind of next on the agenda for Indiana football. But overall, I think it's a move that makes a lot of sense. How's it going to work out? Obviously, time will tell.
Yeah, it's definitely a move that was needed. And, you know, there was something, and I said this during the season, seemed like something clicked in Allen at the Minnesota game. And maybe in the second half of the Minnesota game where they started taking shots downfield, you know, he talked about going to a bowl game. And then after the Purdue game, he talked about delegating the defensive coordinator, you know, duties. Maybe something humbled him. Maybe he realized that, hey, it's okay, you know, to realize that I have to give up these duties for us to be successful and swallow your pride a little bit. And so, you know, maybe that was part of it. I definitely thought something changed, you know, either during the Minnesota game or after the Minnesota game. I can't put my finger on what tangible thing it was, but it was just the way he spoke after games and the things that he said were just a little bit, you know, a little bit different from the beginning of the season. Now let's other staff changes. We, you know, expect to come. One of those words, you know, you're probably looking at a change in offensive coordinator. There's maybe some reshuffling going on the staff in terms of special teams. From last year, special teams absolutely killed IU in a lot of these games. And that's something that at Indiana, at a team like Indiana, you need to be good on special teams. You don't have to be great. You don't have to be the best special teams team in the nation, but you need something. And as good as Logan Justice was, IU was just dreadful in the kick return game. They ended up fair catching most of their kicks. Yeah, they ended up right at 50 in terms of kick return efficiency, but to ask this offense to go 75 yards every single drive is an impossible task, and it's impossible almost, you know, even for the Alabamas and the Clemsons of the world. If you're starting 75 yards out every single time, points are going to be hard to come by. And, you know, Indiana's offense was a dink and dunk offense, and to ask a team to go 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 plays and 75 yards of points on the board and score touchdowns, it was nearly impossible, and it came back to haunt them in the end. And we'll see if, you know, this defensive coordinator promotion is just is something that is the evolution of Tom Allen and going forward. So we'll see. It's going to be a busy off season. Now let's get down to recruiting. Early signing period was, you know, a couple weeks ago on December 19th, Indiana brought in a pretty darn good early signing class that ranked in the top 40 nationally, 10th in the Big Ten. And when you start talking rankings like that, and the difference between 7th and the Big Ten is usually about a player, maybe half a player, you know, a star, you know, half a star ranking here and there, and things like that. But Indiana still has 5 spots open. They signed 19 on the 19th. They still have 5 spots to play with. They still have some needs, but, you know, what are your initial thoughts of this signing class?
That's a good class. I mean, we talked about prior to the end of the early signing period, we talked about, okay, you know, the group that we have on paper is very good. Can we keep these players? There were a couple of guys that you were worried about flipping. Now, Indiana did lose a player, Dorian Jones, linebacker, ended up at Louisville. I don't think IU's too heartbroken about that, to be honest. But, you know, he's – based on kind of what the vibe that's given off by the staff. But anyway, Matthew Bedford was the big one that looked like he might flip to an SEC school. There were a couple of suitors in for him. He ultimately stuck with the Hoosiers, and that was a huge get. Bedford has a big ceiling. And then obviously something that is not factored into the class ranking is a transfer, and Indiana got an impact transfer in Jack Tuttle that I'm going to consider part of the class, because Tuttle still does have 4 years to play for the Hoosiers. So, you know, quarterback transfer from Utah that Indiana's hoping and expecting to be eligible to play, you know, in the 2019 season, a former 4-star player. There's Indiana connections there that made IU a good fit for him, and hopefully can live up to the player that he was coming out of high school. Looking at his high school highlight film, obviously he did not take the field for the Utes, so we don't have any from there, but looking at his high school film, I mean, you know, he's very talented. There's really no denying it. And I think he's a really good fit for Indiana. And looking at the rest of the class, I think they filled a lot of needs. There's still a couple that you'd like to have. I think you'd love to get a safety in this class. Nick Toomer was a player that they really tried hard to flip from Stanford. That was a tall task, and they were unable to do that. No shame in you know, making a choice to go to Palo Alto to play college football. That's certainly a strong decision from Nick Toomer, so understandable. But they weren't able to flip him, so they're still on the lookout for a safety, and I think probably from there you're looking at mostly taking best available guys that you can get. But if you just go down position by position, I think they've added, you know, 7 or 8 guys that are going to help this team as early as next year. Ivory Winters and Samson James at running back, Tewan Mullen, cornerback, that, you know, corner is a position that freshmen can come in and contribute right away in a lot of different ways. Winters and James are both, James obviously the one everybody knows, an Avon 4-star running back, physically looks the part and ready. Ivory Winters put up insane numbers in a small town in Missouri. I mean, just, you know, ridiculous video game numbers if you have it set on like easy. I'm very excited about what he can do. David Ellis, I think, is a player that they're going to anticipate to play slot pretty early, with, you know, losing some bodies at that position. And Ellis is a guy that I know Michigan State and Michigan, if either of them had come in, I know the staff was fearful that, you know, maybe they'd lose him to one of the big boys from in-state. He's from Michigan. Very glad to hold on to him and get him in. And then I think there was just a number of good athletes they got on defense, including the addition of Cam Williams, another 4-star in-state kid, and Bo Robbins, a 4-star in-state kid. Given the results on the field, really phenomenal performance from the coaching staff to get this class in. Now it's about kind of identifying, you know, a few targets, really working on them for that late signing period to complete the class. Like you said, they've got 5 spots left. I would anticipate Indiana uses the full allotment of that, 5 guys that they really like that they can get. And, you know, overall, I think it was a really, really positive development for Indiana. You mentioned 11th as the class ranking. That's really irrelevant. You look at the way that I evaluate this thing, because I'm not an expert looking at, you know, I can look at tape and say, oh, I like the way that this guy does X, or wow, he looks really fast, or obviously he's got a nice frame. I mean, those things are easy. Beyond that, I'm not an expert talent evaluator. What I can do is look at the offer list for players and say, okay, yeah, we're beating out fellow Big Ten East teams. We're beating out Maryland. We're beating out Michigan State, you know, for this player. Or in the case of Samson James, we're beating out Ohio State. Or, you know, we're beating out Missouri or Arkansas, you know, good SEC programs. You look at that offer list, and it looks a whole lot better than what it did 3 or 4 years ago, where, oh, we're beating out Bowling Green, we're beating out Akron, we're beating out Toledo. That's not to say that that's always going to produce victories, but your odds of producing a really good roster are a lot better if you're beating out, you know, consistent bowl programs as opposed to, you know, mid-level MAC programs. The majority of the players that Indiana went after and were able to land were, you know, being pursued heavily by the programs that consistently go to bowl games. And that's how you kind of slowly, it's a slow process, but doing that consistently is how you build your program into a program that you want it to be.
Yeah, and you got to, you know, Tom Allen talked about on signing day, stacking classes back to back.
Right.
One of his responses was probably my favorite response is, well, we're going to have to go out and do it again next year. You know, classes aren't, you don't feel their true impact until, you know, their second or third year on campus when freshmen are now, you know, sophomores, redshirt sophomores, juniors and seniors. It's when you see, you know, college football is a game for upperclassmen. A physical game, and there's a big difference between an 18-year-old kid and a 20-year-old kid, and we've seen it all the time. You know, you see it in schools, in high school, you see it in college. You know, you send your kid out to college at 18, they come back after their sophomore year at 19, 20, and they're physically a different person. And so, you know, while the talented freshmen are good, and IU's played a lot of freshmen, they're only going to get physically more mature under the strength and conditioning program that IU has. They're hopefully going to get better on the field as well. So, you know, if you could stack, you know, now you stack two quality classes together, and you're kind of, you know, now you're kind of paying the piper for some of those late, those, that 2014 class, you know, those classes where IU didn't make the bowl games, who are now going to be seniors, that they're kind of paying the piper on that the last couple of years. But, you know, mm-hmm. recruiting is on the uptick, and hopefully Indiana realizes this and puts guys in positions to win games. Now, the schedule doesn't do them any favors next year, really. But this is where you have to talk with your athletic directors and whoever's in charge of scheduling, going, hey, you need to get us 3 wins in non-conference. And that's what they did this year. They have Ball State up in Indy, which, you know, it's, I don't like playing neutral site games, but being up in Indy, you could build some of that fan base. And the last time they played up in Indy, it was just such a stale atmosphere for IU and Ball State. And I don't think whoever was in charge of the game day ops did a great job. It just, you know, it seemed like a pickup game. And if I went back to the gym at the school that I worked, just flipped on the lights and said, all right, guys, we're going to play a game today. And here it was, and that's what it kind of felt like. Was there was no feel around the stadium that there was a game going on. It's just like, oh, hey, we're going to play at Lucas Oil today. Just a heads up. And for those fans, and hopefully ticket prices are reasonable, but for the fans who have been kind of scared off from driving down to Bloomington with the traffic from Indy or from the north side of the state who want to come down and watch IU, it should be a good showcase game for the Hoosiers. Then you play Eastern Illinois in the FCS program, where you should get a win at home. And then you play UConn, who was statistically the worst team in the FBS last year and was in the conversation, I think, for the worst team ever. But we'll see on that. And then conference play, it's tough. You draw Northwestern at home, and then you have to travel to Nebraska and Purdue out of the West. You play Ohio State and Michigan at home, and then you have to travel to Penn State and to Michigan State. And then you get Rutgers and Maryland. And you flip-flop them. Rutgers at home this year, Maryland's on the road. So, yeah. You got to go to your athletic department. You got to say, I need 3 wins, and I'd like them to be at home. I'd like the, you know, in the years we have, you know, in the years that IU has 5 conference home games, why not play all 3 of your non-conference games at home? Don't start these series with Cincinnati and play home and home, or 2 out of 3 at FIU and things like that. Go to your directional MAC schools. Go, you know, bring in somebody you could beat and who wants to, you know, take a payday on the road, because right now wins are at a premium and you need to get 6. And that's the bottom line. You look at people saying there's too many bowl games and all that stuff. That's great, but it practices, these bowl practices, the exposure on television is great for recruiting. You get to develop the talent you're bringing in. You have 15 extra. So let's say, you know, you look at teams, you know, now Purdue has 30 extra practices over the last 2 years that IU hasn't. That's a lot of practices. That's 2 spring practices more than IU has had. Now, IU had 2 bowl years, but that, you know, start talking about, you know, teams doing it, you know, going 9 times out of 10 years, 8 out of 10 years, and you're talking close to 100, you know, 100 practices, and that goes a long way to developing a program. So IU's got to sit down. Mm-hmm. They got to go over their non-conference schedule. You got to say, okay, what are we doing here? What's our strategy? Are we because they've tried to bring in big name programs and fill the stands. They brought in Navy, that backfired. They brought in Missouri. When Missouri was good, it's close enough to where Missouri would travel. They didn't sell out the game and they lost. Sure, they beat Missouri at Missouri the next year. You played a road game at Bowling Green, you lost. And those are the games that IU that are keeping IU from bowl games. It's not that IU can't beat Ohio State. It's not that IU can't beat Michigan or Michigan State or Penn State or teams like that. The losses that keep IU from bowl games are the loss to Minnesota in 2006, the losses to UConn and Southern Illinois. You look at, last year, the loss to Maryland. You look at 2014, losing to Bowling Green. 2013, the loss to Minnesota and losing to Navy and losing to Missouri. Those are the games that IU needs to – those need to be wins, at least the majority of the time, maybe two out of every three times. And then you could start saying, okay, let's go play Kentucky. Let's see if we could get that series back started. Let's go play, let's bring in Northern Illinois. Let's do something to honor Coach Mal and bring in Northern Illinois or bring in Colorado and things like that. So Indiana has to take a hard look at itself from that point of view to help out that they're bringing in, because you need to get to six wins. And if you don't get to six wins, it doesn't matter. And we'll talk about bowl games here in a second, TJ, and this is a good segue to, are there too many bowl games? I've seen a lot of noise on Twitter saying there are too many bowl games, especially after last night's wacky, wild Cheez-It Bowl, which was a 10-7 overtime win for TCU that featured 9 interceptions. Now, I was entertained. College football, I was entertained, and it wasn't a punt fest. It wasn't like, okay, they can't move the ball. It was the defense made plays, and yeah, it was some crappy quarterback play, but the defense, made plays. It was interceptions, there were returns, and things like that, and it was entertaining. It was the only thing on TV, too. So my message to those people saying there are too many bowl games, go watch something else. You could watch whatever Christmas movies that have been on for the entire month. Go watch some crummy NBA games. Let me enjoy college football for another week before it's that off season that's just killer. I'm not forcing anybody to watch bowl games, although my fiance will say otherwise. But I'm not forcing anybody to watch bowl games. I will watch it on my iPad while you do something else. There's no such thing as too many bowl games. It's made for TV. Yeah, people are in stands, but it's made for TV. You cannot have enough live TV programming, and ESPN makes so much money off of this stuff that it's not going to go. Sure, that this bowl season has kind of been disappointing in terms of great games, but you got a good one on now. In the Independence Bowl between Duke and Temple, 28-27 Duke. You had an entertaining game last night. You had, the Bahamas Bowl went down to the last second, and I think the Camilla Bowl with Eastern Michigan went down to the final second. Now, nobody really wants to watch Army put up 70 on Houston, but the games are not going to go away. And, I enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, get out of my mentions on Twitter and go watch something else. Go take your kids to a movie. Go take your wife out to dinner. Anything find a hobby because this is my hobby. And I enjoy it. I know you enjoy it, TJ, and a lot of people enjoy it. So that's my get off my lawn, but the opposite of get off my lawn on bowl games. So what's your take on the bowl season so far?
Yeah, I mean, so far, like you said, there has not been a ton of, fun or interesting games. There's been a few. The good games, really, the fun matchups anyway, they really kind of kick off tomorrow And then obviously Saturday with the, with the playoff. But, I'm with you. Like, I don't understand people feeling the need to go on Twitter or take to the radio with, oh, what's this bowl? This Cheez-It bowl, ha ha. Like, yeah, they have funny names. Okay, fine. These are exhibition games. They are a reward for, for the coaches. They don't, the games, they want to win, obviously, but it's about the practices. For the players, it's another chance to play a game with their, with their friends, with their teammates, and it's another chance to get, more practice. They get, they get some cool stuff from each bowl game they go to. It's a chance to get away to a destination. Obviously some of them are more attractive than others, but a chance to get away to a destination, do some cool stuff as a team. I mean, and from a fan perspective, like you said, if you're not interested in Duke and Temple, or if you're not interested in Minnesota Georgia Tech, that's fine. Just don't watch. All you have to do is turn the channel or turn on Netflix or whatever. You just don't watch, and that's it. Like, I don't have any problem. If I'm not interested in, the Gasparilla Bowl or the Bad Boy Mowers Bowl or whatever, I just don't watch it. That's it. So I'm with you there. Kind of in terms of kind of Big Ten-wise, what I'm interested in seeing, I actually don't think Purdue-Auburn is going to be that fun of a game. I think Auburn is a complete mess. So I'm not that interested in that. But I do think there's some really fun matchups for the Big Ten. Michigan State, taking on Oregon. I just have a trust factor with Mark D'Antonio that I would anticipate Michigan State is able to figure some things out. Their defense over the last five games has allowed four offensive touchdowns. That's a terrific defense going up against Justin Hebert, who has decided to return to Oregon for his senior year. If he was going out, he'd probably be the top quarterback taken in the NFL draft. So a really good quarterback going up against a really good defense. Question is, for Michigan State, have they figured anything out on offense to prevent them from being completely dreadful on that side of the ball? Mississippi State, Iowa, I don't think it's a good matchup at all for the Hawkeyes, but again, a lot of times it's about which team shows up and wants it a little bit more. Iowa typically is a team that shows up to play. Urban Meyer's last game, that's interesting. The Rose Bowl is always a good watch. I think from strictly a bowl game kind of fun standpoint, really looking forward to Iowa State, Washington State. The Holiday Bowl always seems like it's a fun one. And Washington State, I think, has been, I think their record's inflated. I don't think they're that good, but surprising season for them. Mike Leach's teams are always fun to watch. And then Matt Campbell, I think, is one of the better coaches in college football. So that one's going to be a ton of fun. And then obviously the playoff on Saturday. It's interesting. Both games are looking like they'll probably kick off at around two touchdown spreads, with Clemson and Alabama being favored. I'm not sure. I think those are both pretty steep. Oklahoma, as good offensively as, just about anybody. But what stands out to me from that game, we're not going to do picks or analysis or anything like that, but just what stands out per possession, looking at the S&P Plus pages for these teams, points per possession, Oklahoma 113th out of 130, Alabama second. So that's a scary, scary proposition for Oklahoma. I'm sure that they'll be tempted to, the question that Lincoln Riley has to figure out is how fast do we want to play? Because the faster we go, the quicker our defense has to take the field again. And the slower we go, the more we're taking ourselves out of our game. So it's going to be a delicate balance for Lincoln Riley and that Oklahoma staff to figure out the tempo. And obviously they're going to be tested by you know, they won the Joe Moore Award for the top offensive line in college football. Kyler Murray wins the Heisman. And now for weeks, Nick Saban gets to drill that into his team about how they've been disrespected, how, you know, oh, look at how good Oklahoma, everybody thinks Oklahoma is, yada, yada. Drill that into their heads, and they come out with smoke coming out of their ears. And I could envision a scenario where that defense, the front, just takes it personally and just, you know, blows the doors off of Oklahoma and gets ahead by, you know, three or four scores fairly early. Boom, lights out, it's over. Clemson, Notre Dame.
Well,
really,
one more
don't know
thing
what
on the Alabama Oklahoma.
Sure.
Is suspensions and injuries are going to be playing a big role in both of these games. You know, Alabama has three players suspended. Their starting guard is out, and it seems like it's because of NCAA violations, which means somebody paid for an autograph, I think, and things like that. So they're out for the rest of the season. That could be a factor. You have, you know, Tua was banged up in the SEC championship game. How healthy is he? I think it was a high ankle sprain. Usually that takes about a month to get over. Is he going to be 100%? And you know Oklahoma is going to be prepared for both of those quarterbacks to play. And then in the other game, you have Dexter Lawrence.
Marquise Brown. So
yeah, their best wide receiver could be out. He's anticipating to play, but you know, that's coach speak. That's what you say. You're not going to say 2 weeks before or a week before the game. You know what? I don't really anticipate him playing. And then, you know, with Notre Dame and Clemson, you have, you know, a couple Clemson players failed drug tests. One of them is Dexter Lawrence, who's one of the best defensive linemen in the country, and how that's going to affect Clemson's defense. So, I think there's a lot of off-the-field stuff that's going to affect the on-the-field product, and these games might just be better than what Vegas says they are.
I would agree with that. I think they're pretty steep lines. This is not, in my opinion, this particular Notre Dame squad is a little bit better than the teams that have come out and gotten their, you know, got their doors blown off. I think that they're more capable of hanging with Clemson. I don't think they can beat them, but I do think they're more capable of making it very competitive. In Oklahoma, I respect Lincoln Riley and that offense so much. I do think it's going to be a little bit difficult for Alabama just to run away from them. I would expect, certainly, Alabama and Clemson to be the two that end up meeting again for another national title. But, you know, I would possibly be, and I currently am. I haven't placed any bets yet, but I'm leaning towards taking the underdogs with the points in both of those contests. And certainly in the Alabama-Oklahoma game, I know the over-under right now is set at 80. Boy, I have a hard time seeing Oklahoma hold Alabama's offense, you know, under the high 40s. So I think they'll be fun, entertaining games. And really, as a neutral, that's all I can ask for.
Yeah, you know, entertaining games, games that go into the fourth quarter that have, you know, that have – the balance of the game is still in doubt, and you know, we'll see. And there's going to be a lot of talk about expanding the playoff in the off season. Mm-hmm. There's been the 10 is jumping in on there, and you know, it's going to be Jim Delaney's not going to do anything until he figures out, oh, how can I make more money? And missing the playoff is a huge deficit for the Big Ten. You miss out on millions of dollars from getting a team in, and so he's trying to manipulate the system to favor the Big Ten and favor himself. But you know, you look at Georgia had their chance. I don't feel you had your chance. You're up by 14 points in the fourth quarter and you choked, and I don't think I haven't heard a national person guy come out there and say, hey, you choked. 14 point, you had a 14 point lead. You faked the punt, and their backup quarterback went down and beat you. So, yeah, you coughed that one up. Why do you deserve to go to the playoff? You had your shot. That was a de facto playoff game. You know, again, the Big Ten, your non-conference games. Now, I'm not saying that Ohio State doesn't lose if they play to Purdue that week. But let's say that crossover game, does not happen. And instead, Ohio State is playing a MAC school or a lower tier Power 5 school. They're probably in the playoff. Not every conference needs to play the same amount of conference games, whether that be 9 or 8. I think the Big Ten is finally realizing that is becoming a hazard, and it's costing your middle teams wins too. And you know, to go back to something that Kevin Wilson said a couple years ago at Big Ten Media Days, when asked about the 9-game schedule, you know, he says you're taking away a week where the Big Ten has a chance to go 14-0 and guaranteeing that they go 7-7. And so when you look at non-conference records and schedules and overall records, you know, that takes a factor into that, and strength of schedules and wins and all that stuff. So you're taking a week where you could go 14-0 or 13-1 or 12-2 and just guaranteeing that your conference is going to have 7 losses that week. So I think that's one of the things that we'll discuss further on in the offseason, TJ, and that's going to be a follow-the-money type deal for Jim Delaney, because that's all he's out for is money. I don't think he has anybody else's well-being in mind other than himself and you know, the pocketbooks of the conference. And so, you know, we'll see. Are they gonna? The conference schedules have now come out, I think, through 2024, and we'll see. We'll see where they go, and it's gonna be a heck of an interesting journey to see if the playoff expands to 8 teams. I go back and forth on it. I'd like to see all the Power 5 conference champions get in, and then maybe an at-large, either from the best group of 5 team or an at-large from another Power 5 school, Power 5 conference. But, you know, right, everything seems to shake its way out. Now, there are going to be years where only 2 teams deserve to go to the playoff. And maybe that's, you know, that's maybe people thinking that's a year like this year where Alabama and Clemson have clearly been the best all year. But then you had an undefeated Notre Dame and, you know, and Oklahoma had a revenge win over Texas. So we'll see. What are your thoughts on expanding the playoff?
Honestly, I'm so pleased that there is one. I'm still at the point where I'm happy with 4. I can see, you know, I've read and heard the arguments for, you know, 6-team playoff or an 8-team playoff, you know, the 6 where you give the 1 and 2 a bye. Not really in favor of that model. I think that there, but personally, I do think that expansion to 8 is inevitable. I think that the next playoff TV contract will likely include 8 teams and get an even higher number in terms of, you know, dollar amount that's paid for the contract. So I think you'll see it go up to 8 with caveats in there for, you know, 1 non-Power 5 team per year. So, you know, one of the, in this case, it'd be UCF getting like the 8th seed or something, playing Alabama in the first round, and then, you know, 5 conference champions. You know, I think there's a good argument to be made for that. I think there's a good argument to keep it at 4. I don't feel strongly about it either way. I just, you know, I don't want the regular season to be made irrelevant for a school like, you know, for an Alabama or a Georgia or an Oklahoma, an Ohio State. I don't want, you know, to enter into things saying, well, you know, yeah, we lost the game, but it's fine. We aren't going to win the fine. You know, as long as we finish 11-1 or 10-2 even, you know, we can get one of those eight, and then, you know, from there, that's when our season really starts. I don't want it to get to that point, but I do think that expansion to eight is an inevitable path. As you said, follow the money, and I think that there's more money in an 8-team playoff than a 4-team, so that's where we're going to end up. I think it's a ways off, though, and for now, I'm real happy with the system we have.
Yeah, you know, one of the greatest perks of college football is that every week does matter. And, you know, a
yep.
loss, as we saw this year, a loss at Purdue, a 29-point loss is going to be it's going to kill your playoff chances. A loss in the SEC title game is going to kill your chances.
Yep.
So it's not as crazy as it used to be, where if you lost a game, you're done. And now you can, if you win your conference with one loss and have enough good wins, you could still get in. But going to eight teams, if you start putting two or three lost teams, and they probably have to change the wording to most deserving instead of best, because
yeah.
you know, even you know, Alabama and Clemson are clearly the best teams in the country, and if they had lost to if Alabama had lost to Georgia, are you really going to say, well, they're not the best team in the country anymore? So, you know, you got to – otherwise, you just take the recruiting rankings, take, okay, over the last 5 years, who are the top four teams? Okay, they clearly have the best talent. Let's put them in the playoffs. So hopefully they could avoid doing that and really keep the significance of the regular season and maybe – get some of these teams to play bigger non-conference games at the beginning of the year and get some marquee games, key games going in the regular season as well. So anyway, TJ, that does it for our podcast this afternoon. Thanks for joining me. I hope you had a Merry Christmas and I'm wishing you a Happy New Year as well. We'll be back throughout the off season to talk national topics, IU football topics. There'll be plenty of stuff to go around. So
sure.
Thank you for joining me on this drizzly, dreary, windy Indiana afternoon.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening, everybody. Happy New Year and enjoy the bowls.
All right. That does it for today's podcast. Thanks for joining us. You can follow us on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. Check out HoosierHuddle.com for all updated IU football content. You can subscribe to the podcast and anywhere you listen to your podcasts. Enjoy the holiday season with your friends and family. Enjoy the bowl games. If you don't, change the channel, go watch a movie, work out, do something. Just don't bark at me because you don't like bowl games. That's a you problem, not a me problem. Anyway, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you in 2018.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.